Okay, so here we are, starting our fourth year, and it's January of 18, and we're studying damaged bonds. And I have to say, you know, as I start to prepare for each of these new books, the same feeling arises. It's simply impossibility. It seems impossible how to convey Eigen and his work, how to convey his level of complexity. It feels quite impossible. He writes as part phenomenologist, part dreamweaver, part analyst, part mystic, by weaving together themes and case studies. I feel he takes forward very important psychoanalytic threads with his own ideas. And he does this with a literary, even a poetic style that alternates between being literal, literary, lyrical, often metaphorical, and for me, always gripping and alive and stimulating. He is one of the few analytic writers that I've read who actually does what Wilfred Bion said were the criteria for good psychoanalytic writing. Because remember, Bion once said that most of the, quote, scientific psychoanalytic writing that he had read was nothing but pure boredom. Eigen says that good psychoanalytic writing should stimulate in the reader an experience, and that such experience should be durable and in line with what it evoked in the writer in the first place. Now, I hear that Christopher Bolas is coming to Portland in March, yeah? And I like Bolas very much. And I know from a recent interview he gave with Brett Carr, who wrote a lovely little book called Tea with Winnicott, among others. If you like Winnicott, I highly recommend that one. So Bolas was asked in this interview who he likes to read these days. And he said he only has two favorites, Adam Phillips and Michael Eigen. And I hope when he comes that someone asks him about that, because it turns out I can't make it that day. But I'd love to hear his response. So if Eigen feels impossible to teach, why do it? Well, as Eigen himself says in the opening lines of this book, he has gratitude for the entire therapy field, for allowing him to work with others, as well as, quote, bang his head against the edges of his own psychic universe, end quote. And that's kind of what it feels like for me. There seems to be some benefit from pushing up against what feels impossible. And the times I've met with Eigen in New York and told him about my plans to start this group, back many years ago, several years ago now, he responded favorably. He liked the idea, but he was also very generous. He said, Robin, he said, have fun with it. Don't think you have to get it, or get it all, or get it right. Have fun with it, and take it your own way. Use your own filtering system and be creative. Have fun with it. Pretty generous. And so along the lines of that quote I sent out with the first notice about analytic intuition, because, you know, trying to convey Eigen happens to be my problematic situation, I'm going to be relying on my own intuition, and my own associative matrix as we go along. But I do like to start these sessions with at least some anchoring points or touchstones to provide a little bit of framework. And here are a few. We're going to be on the lookout for different forms of doubleness, whether we call these constant conjunctions, which is simply two things that are found together a lot, or if they're binaries or opposites. For instance, what would be an example of a constant conjunction? Consciousness and unconscious, mind and body, psyche, soma, even self and others. They always go together. One doesn't cause the other. One isn't responsible for the other. They simply occur together. But it seems we're wired in such a way that we often like to attribute causality when we find two things happen together. The old saying, correlation does not mean causation, is appropriate here. We're also going to be looking for different forms of rhythm. And we can use many different words for rhythm. Fluidity, flow, plasticity, movement. These are psychic rhythms, emotional rhythms, like breakdown and recovery, injury and repair. Even more basic than forms of doubleness or rhythm are some foundational touchstones that is pretty much where Eigen lives, which are things like our emotional reality, our experiencing feelings, emotional impact, and our capacity for aliveness. And what furthers it or blocks it? Our capacity for aliveness and what furthers it or blocks it. We don't have to look far for doubleness because there's some even in the title of our book, Damaged Bonds. With bonds referring both to relational attachment bonds from childhood as well as linking bonds, whether the link is bonds of self-connection, connecting links and bonds that bind us up, bonds that can function in many ways. There can be annihilating bonds and life-giving bonds. Eigen tells us in the preface that he favors Donald Winnicott and Wilfred Bion. And by the way, I see him as carrying on their lineage, actually all the way back to Freud and Jung, along with many spiritual traditions as well. But why Winnicott and Bion? Eigen says, both of these men are concerned with madness in its destructive and creative aspects. And they are both concerned with damage to self or personality and with our capacity to live. Both feel that our sense of aliveness has a rough time and can cause damage as well as get damaged. It can be poisoned and poisonous and become numb as life continues. Yet in each of these authors, there is a deep faith or sense that generative processes are ubiquitous if they can be given a chance. Aliveness needs support and practice to fare well, to reach workable combinations of decency and creativeness. So we're going to find lots of doubleness. Eigen says, one of the chilling characteristics of life is that bonds that nourish us also damage us, that we are formed and malformed at the same time. So that's another kind of maddening thing about Eigen. Not just that he has a very broad playing field, but that within this playing field and along some of these continua, he has the audacity to talk about mixtures. Mixtures of creativity and destruction. I think last fall, I brought in a list of historical artists and writers and composers, some very famous people, some great names, who either had been hospitalized for mental health issues or had tried to commit suicide. So there's a mixture. Some of our greatest contributors in the arts and sciences, creative people, have the most struggles sometimes. Maybe that's not surprising. Dreaming and waking life. Dreaming and waking life and their relationship. That's another doubleness. Bion might say dreaming while we're awake, right? And reverie, being in contact with our unconscious process. We might also think of Jung's idea of active imagination as another form or iteration of the same thing. But perhaps most poignantly, this book is about psychic digestion, emotional digestion. There are many other words we could give it. Emotional processing, unconscious processing or assimilation, metabolization, digestion, all variants of a theme. Eigen likes to use processes of the body and apply them to psychic process. He says that unconscious processing is to the psyche what air or blood flow is to the body. We could spend the rest of the time today just on that one sentence. Unconscious processing is to the psyche what air or blood flow is to the body. I should put that on the Miller analogies test, huh? He uses terms like psychic taste buds for the many ways we experience one another. Not just through our five senses, but so many other sensitivities, antenna, receptors that are mostly unconscious and automatic. He says we taste each other. We get instant hits, feels, tastes about one another. A variant of this is Malcolm Gladwell's idea of thin slicing in his book Blink, a kind of gestalt impact that happens in a split second using our psychic taste buds. As Gladwell uses the term, thin slicing refers to the ability of our unconscious to find patterns in situations and people based on very narrow slices of experience. It is part of what makes the unconscious so dazzling. And dazzling it is. The unconscious is a deep well with no guarantees as to its creative or destructive character. Along with the ghastly fact that I mentioned that both creative and destructive aspects can be mixed together. During our reading of Toxic Nourishment, again, that list of wonderful contributors throughout history, mixtures. Now, a much slower and expanded form of perception and attention than thin slicing, and a more studied use of our psychic taste buds, happens during the therapy hour in what Freud called using evenly hovering attention. Evenly hovering attention. As a mode or attitude or approach to take in and receive as much as we can about a patient and what they bring to the session, moment by moment. Using all of our senses. Wilfred Bion extends this kind of paying attention by taking an even more radical view, one that is raw and naked and quite impossible. That famous dictum from Bion, to be without memory, desire, understanding, or expectation. Without memory, desire, understanding, or expectation. To be totally permeable, without any agenda or idea or wish about what is occurring in the room. A strategy to allow impacts from the patient to register as much as impacts from our own unconscious process. In Eigen's language, a rhythm of impact and response. How much and in what ways dare we let ourselves and each other in? A therapy relationship is devoted to how we enable and block experiencing ourselves and each other. And it creates a bond that is devoted to processing bonding damage and the ways we short-circuit life-giving feelings. The major themes in this book revolve around damage to psychic structures, including unconscious structures that support dreaming, damage to capacity for dream work, damage to superego structures, and ultimately damage to structures of the personality. Damaged bonds and damaged dream work go together. Bion feels that dreams cannot do their dreaming work if what they are compelled to do is digest a state of affairs that damages digestion. For in effect, dreaming a damaging object that dream work cannot put together is a conundrum. It's a vicious cycle. Bion calls attention to a fear or a fright that stops psychic functioning in basic ways, particularly with regard to processing emotional life. And so the capacity for emotional nourishment gets wounded. And the wounding process stymies the psyche's attempts to see and digest and work with it. There are a lot of painful examples in this book. And at times, you know, as I read them and others of his work, I sometimes feel like a kind of a Dante character going through different levels of hell, different rungs of hell. Eigen, like Winnicott and Bion, they all tend to tackle what is the absolute hardest about damaged personality. The worst. And in particular, damage inflicted when personality is beginning to form. When damage reaches unconscious substructures that are necessary to support life. If the equipment that helps us process and transform how our feelings and emotion get damaged, a person's relationship to what bothers them can become self-defeating. The good news is that therapy can help dream work to function better. Eigen writes that to a certain extent, the therapist becomes an auxiliary dream processor, giving the patient the support needed to enable the growth of primary process work. Primary process helps to initiate emotional digestion, among other things. And here I want to digress for just a minute about a kind of a radical change in thinking about primary and secondary process from how they were classically conceived. This is from the sensitive self. If primary process works well enough, bits and pieces of catastrophe become usable in dream work. Impact gives rise to image, which gives rise to symbol, which gives rise to thought. If primary process cannot process, if it is too damaged, it tends to mirror its own damaged state. It does not process this state so much as flash it over and over, like a SOS or worse. It may become a meaningless caricature of itself, repeating its disability and going on deteriorating. For many years, if I were to give a talk in New York about primary process work as binding or helping to initiate the transformation of affect, I would be told, no, it's secondary process that binds. Primary process mostly discharges. However, Rycroft, Noy, Milner, Ehrenzweig, and Mate Blanco were among those who emphasized the profound ordering activity of primary process work itself, often nourished by chaos. It is difficult to convey my joy upon coming across a passage in Ehrenzweig years ago, and this was written in 04, on the rigidity of primary process work in schizophrenia. Rather than emphasizing primary process as flooding secondary process, Ehrenzweig believed that in schizophrenia, something was wrong with primary processing. Instead of processing, it was spinning. It was too afraid of affect to tolerate and process it. It became rigid and repetitive, cycling more of the same rather than working with news of difference. The psychoanalytic milieu I lived in then, he says things are changing now, emphasized building better ego defenses against the flood of a great discharge machine gone mad. Largely, they thought, because of an underdeveloped or weak or malformed ego. So to find a group of people across the ocean speaking of spontaneous affective ordering processes in which order grows from the ground up rather than from a rationalistic order imposed top down, Eigen says his breathing became easier. It became clear that no amount of defensive imposition on deep madness would win the day. Something had to happen on the level of madness itself, or we would beat ourselves into the ground in order to make believe we weren't mad or we weren't murderers, and then be mad murderers anyway, and the worse for it. So we've got some elephants upstairs, but I hope we can bear with it. So, to me, this is another profound implication. He's actually valorizing primary process. He's saying that the unconscious itself can be damaged. And when it is, early in life, it affects all the other structures throughout our personalities, from ego to superego. And we're going to spend a lot of time later in the weeks to come on superego damage and what happens, actually, in the next couple weeks. Spontaneously ordering processes. I mean, isn't that where the creative unconscious comes from? The ability to dip into that deep well and bring something out of it that's useful and not just rigidified or spinning. I love Winnicott's term. He contrasts disintegration with something he calls unintegration. Unintegration simply being a space or a mind space of letting be. I guess with some tendrils that connect to beyonds without memory and desire, where we allow what arises, what comes up, because we haven't imposed the rational ideal of integration upon it. So there's an allowing. There's a freedom in that, if we're able to do it. So, pain and suffering of our psychic life, our emotional life. Why does Eigen concentrate so much on this? In a way, I feel he is a guide. He's a kind of a Beatrice for Dante-like explorations of these different rungs of hell. And thank goodness we have a little bit of a guide. Just a little bit more, and then I'm going to be quiet for a minute, if I can. Eigen says there are times to get into one's pain, and there are times to let pain go. In most cases, in this book, we go deeper into pain. But in doing so, our ability to see what is there grows more inclusive, and the scope of experiencing becomes more subtle. It takes a great deal to attend to different states of self, the state of a moment, and the transformation of states that happen over time. It's what I was getting at in our last seminar. It's one thing to have a thought. It's another thing to think it. It's one thing to have a feeling. It's another thing to feel it. What does he mean? He means that to truly feel a thought or to think a feeling, we have to let it build. We have to tolerate it, stay with it, not run away or distract or deflect, but let it build. And that takes a growth of capacity. And that's part of what Eigen's about, is growth of capacity. One often finds damage in the people who come to us tied to embedded, damaged objects that are now part of self. We're talking object relations language now. And here's a startling thing he says. It is not possible to remove the damage to self by removing the damaged object. For example, residues of a depressed or psychotic or abusive parent. The damage is done. But one can help a person to open new channels to process the damage and hopefully enable new states of self to evolve, new fields of experiencing. And I'll end today these comments with one more startling paragraph. Eigen writes, I have become convinced that much of what happens in therapy, often what is most important, is nonverbal, permanently outside the reach of words. This in no way minimizes the use of words. There are people who must storm the gates with words, try to say everything. Sometimes they take words, or words take them, over the edge, opening paths of experience. Words do lead to new aspects of reality. But in most therapeutic work, there is a tone or an atmosphere or a feel in the room that is more important. Words, after all, do not merely involve the exchange of information. They are part of the exchange of states of being. There is an osmotic aspect to therapy that must not be overlooked.